Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu of Yahoo Sports Canada. And on this week's episode of the Raptors Recap, I have Blake Murphy of The Athletic.
Hey, man. I was told I was being brought into these offices for the Inside the Green Room podcast. I don't know what the deal is here.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Danny talks to you enough. But yeah, we are in the Inside the Green Room studio right now.
Man, congratulations.
Thank you. This is great. This has been great, Blake. Super adorable father-son bonding moment here. This is the first episode of the Recap podcast, so I'll sort of go through what you can expect from these shows going forward. It's going to be about a 45 to an hour long conversation with a rotating panel of co-hosts. Yes, it won't just be me and various guests. Blake obviously was very available, so I got you first. Blake.
If there's anything people know about me, I'm very available.
You're very available, man. I've seen you respond to every comment in your comment section, which I got to say, that's
really
admirable.
People pay for the content.
I mean, the commenters, though, that's got to be an extra.
I certainly wasn't doing that at Raptors Republic.
No.
All those people had their ad blockers on.
JV Hive?
Yeah.
JV Hive? We'll talk about JV Hive.
Turns out they were right.
Oh, my God.
Teaser for later.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, we'll talk about JV and the excellent piece you wrote when you were down in Memphis and what else might be coming out from Memphis. But let's start with the Raptors right now. Kyle Lowry getting injured once again. First off, do you feel like it was a dirty play by Mitchell Robinson? And do you feel like people were overreacting to the whole thing in terms of, because I think it was because it was so jarring. You got people pointing fingers at Nick Nurse. You got people, coming at Mitchell Robinson and flooding his DMs. Like, how did you see the play unfold?
First of all, Mitchell Robinson, you got to close those DMs. You're a professional athlete.
Definitely.
But in terms of the first thing is the coming at Nick Nurse thing, I get it. They were up 30 plus. It was the middle of the third quarter and Jeremy Lin was set to check in shortly.
Yeah.
Teams do not pull guys from blowouts early in the third quarter to rest them. It's you play until your normal third quarter break and then you're done. Yeah. That's Giannis does that. Embiid does that. Kyrie does that.
Yeah, it's standard. You want to keep players with their rhythm and stuff. Plus, Kyle only played 26 minutes. But yeah. Do you feel like it was a dirty play?
Yes. I don't think it was. I like the way Kyle Lowry explained it after the game where he said it was dirty, but I don't think there was intent there. So it wasn't like Mitchell Robinson attacked.
The Matthew Dellavedova excuse.
Yeah. I don't think Robinson meant to do that, but you are at all times responsible to be in control of your body. So if you are flailing wildly and you collide with someone and you happen to grab their leg and give them a Hiroshi Tanahashi dragon whip.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, the Japanese wrestling references that everyone expected 5 minutes into your first episode of the podcast.
People know what to expect with it. You got a brand.
Yeah.
You got a brand.
But yeah, I thought it was dirty, and whether he meant to do it or not, I think he probably did not in a flash in his brain be like, oh, I have a chance to hurt Kyle Lowry as I'm falling like this. Mm-hmm. But you're responsible for your body, and he should feel bad about it.
Yeah. I do feel like, though, that the over-the-top reaction to, like, the fact that this is, like, how old is he? Like, 20? 19, 20? Yeah. He's a rookie, right?
Yeah, he's one of the youngest players in the entire NBA.
Yeah, like a 19-year-old, any 19-year-old, regardless of what profession you're doing, if you're getting bombarded with negative comments on Instagram, on Twitter, and stuff like that, like, I could definitely see how that would keep someone up at night and keep someone wanting to defend themselves. And I think Robinson did do that. He did plead his case. You know, he said, you know, it was an intentional play and he wants to apologize. But
to that point, he should have made himself available post-game.
So he wasn't available post-game?
No, the Knicks said he was not available.
Knicks PR said that, huh?
Yeah.
Knicks PR. Great organization, that group.
Yeah.
Working on their their notes app.
And to your point about him being a young guy and that maybe getting in his head, he's a young guy who his success so far has been like, I think that's a player with a lot of potential. Mm-hmm. His success is based off of being really twitchy and being all over the place and blocking 15 three-pointers in a season because you just fly out wildly at closeouts. Now, he needs to learn to rein that in and be safer about that around other players.
Or just not get into the foul trouble. Like, he barely played yesterday because he just kept fouling people.
Yeah. But you got to get those highlights, blocking corner three-point shots.
Yeah. Are we sure he's not just Bebe? American Bebe?
Yeah. I don't know what his politics are, but otherwise.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway.
By the way, who has turned into, he's basically one of those guys who just spends all day posting Instagram stories of his workouts.
I think that's called free agency.
Yeah. He's back in, I don't know if he's in the U.S. now, but he had left his Spanish team to come back to Brazil.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't obviously tracking Bebe stats too hard. We'll talk about real basketball stuff or real Toronto Raptors stuff in a second, but no, it's okay. This is what people come for. Bebe's got like a gray beard now, kind of.
Yeah.
And he wasn't
dyed
doing
it
that
at one
well.
Point.
So he was dying at gray. That's a relief.
He was dying his beard.
That's a relief.
Is it?
He's like 24 years old. If he's already got a gray beard, I don't know, man.
Is that better than that's worse than him dying his beard gray?
I mean, at least one's a choice, you know? The other one is a choice made for you, so. Not everyone can have a beard as nice as yours, Blake. All right. Kyle, so apparently he's questionable for OKC.
Questionable for OKC.
This begs the question, what will it take for Kyle to miss an actual game on ESPN?
Honestly, I get that it lines up that way, and he played in the one Philly, he returned in the two Philly games, the second of which was only a one-game absence, and he might not have been that hurt in the game that he missed. Well. Also, though, he did just like miss a couple games. He did sit through what they had initially called like only ankle soreness, so I don't know. I don't know if it's like, obviously if he plays it'll look that way, mm-hmm. but also maybe his ankle's fine.
Yeah, maybe it just looked really bad.
It did look really bad, and he was limping after the game, and he said it was pretty tender, and like, obviously the fact that you have two recently sprained ankles, you know, I'm not a kinesiologist, but I would assume that if you are running on two sore ankles, that maybe puts other body parts at risk as your body tries to compensate. Mm. So I would probably, based on the little information we have, I'd probably prefer for him to sit out Wednesday.
Wow, Blake Haberstroh.
DMP rest, baby.
I was going to say, it is kind of a disappointment that Kyle obviously got hurt because he had really been finding his groove of late.
Mm-hmm.
Since February, here are his stats. 17 points a game, 6 rebounds, 8.5 assists, and 43% shooting from deep on 3.5 makes per game and 8.2 attempts. So I think that's ideally where you could get the most out of Kyle, because as much as earlier this season, right, when Kyle was leading the league with assists and things like that, it did kind of feel strange that the Raptors, basically he is their second best player. It was strange that he was being so unselfish and passive in terms of his own offense. And it feels like, whether it's the Marc Gasol effect, and we can talk about that later, but it feels like Kyle has really finally found the balance between, you know, how he should be playing. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, him overcoming that back injury, man. I mean, remember how low that thing was? Like, he had 0 points in that Milwaukee loss at the ACC, and it was really close. But yeah, Kyle looks good, and I hope he overcomes the injury.
Yeah, I think, you know, there are a couple important parts of Lowry turning it around. Obviously, the three-point shooting normalizing is a big one. I think it's something we probably all figured was coming back. Like, Kyle Lowry is too good a shooter to shoot, like, 33% all year. You mentioned how passive he was earlier in the year.
Yeah.
He was not looking to score at all off of his drives.
Yep.
And that's one thing when you have Jonas Valanciunas as a role man partner, but when it's Serge Ibaka pick and popping to the elbow, or Marc Gasol, who, you know, I don't think naturally thinks dive after he sets a screen. You know, I think he scored someone joked on Twitter last night that he scored in the paint for like the first time as a Raptor.
It felt like that, honestly.
Yeah. So Lowry, you know, the pick and roll partners he has now, and he's so good in the pick and roll, and he is such a great playmaker. But the partners he has now kind of require him to be more aggressive as a scorer. So you have to respect that threat as well. And his free throws have come up a little bit. He was not getting to the line at all early in the year, and he was not attacking, like he wasn't looking to shoot off of drives at all, and that stuff's come up just a little bit as well, and it makes him more dynamic, which I think, you know, in theory that should make it easier for his bigs too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is the thing, right? Like, Kyle has always been he's always been so instrumental in helping everyone else score. And now there's finally help for Kyle in terms of who can help him get a shot. I think Gasol's really helped in that regard. But I also think, like, just indirectly, like, the fact that there's so much spacing on the Raptors now, right? Like, Pascal is now a respected corner shooter. He really does pull a defender to the corner.
We'll see come playoff time.
We'll see
come playoff time. I'm still skeptical that he's shot well enough, long enough to pull a defender in a playoff series.
I mean, worst case scenario, I think, you know, if defenses have to pick their poison, they're definitely leaving Pascal open in the corner. But, I mean, if he can hit those, then it changes the entire equation. But still, right now, Pascal's been hitting great from the corners. Danny has been – I mean, Danny's had an incredible season. Yes. Right? We're not just saying that over because 50, his team was in the background.
He's over 50% from the right corner. I think he's second only to P.J. Tucker in total makes from the corners this year.
Remember when we had P.J. Tucker? That was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Love just, like, pregame chatter about shoes.
Yeah. Also, P.J. Tucker was my inspiration for first day at the office. Remember that his first day with the Raptors, he didn't sleep for like 26 hours, and then he shut down Isaiah Thomas and the Celtics, and afterwards told DeMar right after the game, you know, we're really good defensively, we just got to get DeMar to actually buy in, and then we're going to be a great team.
Yeah, that I haven't slept and so I have no filter today.
Yeah,
kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise, definitely filtered. Yeah, Kyle's been playing great. It's I think. You know, this is one of those things where you just wish everyone was healthy at the same time, right? Because we've seen all sorts of different Raptors go through stretches where they've been really, really, really good. I mean, Kawhi's been consistent all year. And I would say he's been improving throughout the year in terms of his passing, although it's kind of marginal. But you've seen Pascal have a lot of great moments. You've seen Kyle really pick up the slack of late as well. Serge obviously carried them for like a solid month there. I mean, it's just disappointing that you don't have all the players ready at the same time. The one thing with the schedule right now is that they only basically have two more useful games coming up, right? And these two games against OKC, those are nice barometers of what the Raptors can expect in the playoffs.
Also a team that is kind of designed to exploit what the Raptors like to give teams in the pick and roll.
Do you
remember last year, Westbrook and Adams kind of killed them. Westbrook would eat those floater range shots that the Raptors are willing to concede with their big dropping back.
Okay.
And Steven Adams is so good at sliding underneath the big after he sets the screen to get a ton of offensive rebounds. They'll be a nice – I think it'll be really nice to see how they look Wednesday and then see how they adjust Friday. And I don't think they'll dramatically change their approach, but – you know, playing a team twice in a row close to the playoffs is probably helpful experience in terms of, you know, hey, this is how playoff series is going to look and this is how we can make adjustments.
That game you're referring to, by the way, March 18th, 2018. So basically a year ago to this day, OKC scored 132 points in regulation. That game, very memorable for many reasons. Corey Brewer following DeMar DeRozan and then Mark Davis getting chased out of the arena by security.
Oh, that was that game?
That was that game. And as you mentioned, Russell Westbrook had 37 in that game, 15 of 22 shooting. And Steven Adams had 25 on 10 of 13 shooting. Yeah. It was a very good performance by OKC.
Even Carmelo got buckets in that game.
Did he? Oh, I forgot Carmelo was on the
He had 15 points on 6 of 10.
Wow. Plus 21. That's probably the last time Carmelo was plus 21 in a game. I mean, it just feels like, you know, hopefully they have Kyle, but even if they do have Kyle, like, he's obviously not going to be 100%. Like, how much do you feel like the lack of continuity is going to hurt the Raptors in a tangible way?
It's tough because on the one hand, there have been benefits to this, right? I wrote about it this morning at The Athletic in that, you know, you haven't seen all the lineups that you haven't got to see together a lot
mm-hmm.
are the lineups that you can be pretty sure are going to work together. Like, the starters with Gasol. Like, you can be pretty sure that that's going to work. They're just going to score so much. But you've gotten to look at other different lineups here, and you've gotten to see Fred with the starters in different – and we're going to talk playoff rotations, I think. But you've gotten to see Fred in the starters in place of Kyle or in place of Kawhi, and you've got to see both centers in there, and you've got to see for little bits how OG looks in the Siakam spot or the right. Leonard spot and stuff. So there are benefits, but I think – you know, if they had their way, you look at these final 10 games and you would like to not have your hand forced about which day you're missing guys and stuff like that, because I do think there's something to even those little bits of familiarity or working on, you know, small, like Nick Nurse has said, he doesn't want to show a lot more that they might use in the playoff, but you might want to trial a couple things.
You can't let Cooper Smither see everything, you know?
Yeah. So I don't think it's like the end of the world. But I think if they – I think they would really like to have all of their guys for the last 10 games, maybe not Wednesday, but from Friday moving forward, and then you can at least pick the games where you don't have your guys, right?
Right. Okay, well, let's look at the rotation then, because the way I have it drawn up right now, I think we can agree the 9 players that might actually feature consistently in a playoff rotation.
I think I have 8 that are in pen.
Okay, give me your 8 in pen.
Okay, so Lowry, Green, Siakam, Kawhi.
Yeah.
Obviously, both centers.
Yeah.
Fred.
Yeah.
And I think OG's in there for sure. I think he's come along enough defensively.
I agree.
And when he's playing with better players, it just, hey, knock down a corner three and cut baseline and then go defend. And I think he's done well enough in that role the last 2 months that he's back firmly in. And then I think the 9th and if there's a 10th spot are a little bit more open to matchup or how these last couple weeks go.
Yeah, I'm largely in agreement with you. I feel like I might have Norm as like a 8.5. That 0.5 guy where it's just – Norm can give you like actual buckets. And if he's actually locked in and playing defense, then he doesn't necessarily hurt you on that end.
The thing with Norm giving you buckets, though, is that Norm giving you buckets is really valuable in those lineups where you don't have a lot of your best players in it.
Okay.
And you will be using those like in a lineup that has Jeremy Lin and Patrick McCaw and OG in it, you need Norm to get those buckets and a guy who can push in transition or 6 seconds left on the clock, create something.
Mm-hmm.
That's less and less valuable if you're staggering Kyle, Kawhi, and Siakam, and especially if Gasol ends up coming off the bench. I don't think, you know, I think Powell's probably ahead of McCaw and Lin if I drew it up right now.
Right.
But I don't think he's like a, I don't have him as a firm in.
Okay. That's fair enough. Fair enough. I mean, honestly, Powell's not necessarily consistent enough to be a firm in. I kind of like the idea of McCaw getting just spot minutes because unlike Powell where there's like a lot of upside, like McCaw's thing is just consistency, right? He's going to come in, he's going to defend the ball. I feel like he's probably the second best on-ball defender on the Raptors outside of Kawhi. And I just mean like containing penetration.
I might put, depending on the matchup, maybe OG.
That's a good point. OG's real. Yeah. Okay, at worst, the third. You know what I mean? And there's a value to that. Yeah.
And he's a turnover-forcing machine, which helps. Again, that's another thing that helps those offense-starved bench units sometimes. Now, the thing with McCaw is he's the one guy on the team more than anyone, I would bet, that an opposing defense just ignores.
Yeah, definitely.
So you're going to want to pick those minutes. I know you had him down as a very small number of minutes.
Two.
The Norman Powell honorary here, make something happen at the end of the second quarter minutes.
Yeah. Wow. Make something happen for the opposition.
Yeah. Or the Jordan Lloyd honorary go foul three-point shooter and check out.
Yikes.
Sorry, that's my guy. I shouldn't say that. Yeah. But No, I agree with you. And I think McCaw, especially if he's playing against opposing bench units, you know, Doug Smith calls him the chaos agent or something like that.
Agent of Chaos?
Something like that.
That sounds like a bad Netflix show.
Yeah. Oh, definitely something in the Marvel or DC universe.
Right.
But yeah, he makes stuff happen with his defense. And even if he's just like a specialist, you know, there are some teams that you might run into in the playoffs who have a gifted bench scorer.
Yeah.
You know, there's your Ish Smith coverage right there.
I mean, I was surprised Nick Nurse didn't eventually get around to that in the Pistons game. But maybe, who knows? Maybe he'll save something for the first round. By the way, man, Dwayne Casey versus Nick Nurse.
It's hilarious,
in the first
man.
Round would be
I
so
don't understand
fun.
How people don't find this funny.
It is really funny because Dwayne he's so buttoned up and he's so smooth. But yeah, he's been subtly taking jabs. It's been
He does not have a good poker face when it comes to his feelings about the Raptors.
No, man. Like when Andre Drummond was hitting those free throws. Oh God. Dwayne is a good coach. He's proven again this year. We'll see what happens in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think you know, the thing with Dwayne Casey is if you have a 35 win team on talent that you want to get low 40s wins out of.
Wow.
That's your guy.
Wow.
Look, that's a hard thing to do.
That is true. I mean, he did that with the Raptors.
And like that's and with the Raptors, maybe they were 45 win talent and he got 55 wins out of them. Like
yeah, exactly.
He can coach a not super talented team up.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to the rotation. This is the way I have it drawn up right now. Okay. So at point guard, the way these all totaled up to 48, but
let's just go over the total minutes numbers because I mean, like I saw the way you broke it down, and like
right.
whether Lowry and Van Vliet are point guard or shooting guard if they're playing together.
Fair enough. I got Lowry playing 38, Van Vliet playing 24, 24 being sometime at point guard, sometime at shooting guard, like you mentioned. Danny Green 30, Kawhi 35, Pascal 35, OG 15, Serge 24, Mark 24, Norm 11, and McCaw 2.
Yeah, so when I looked at this, the one thing is I think Kawhi probably ends up playing around 38. Like, I
okay. That's at, a separate conversation. But
yeah. Well, okay. We can have that conversation. It's just like when he has played, especially in big games, they have not really hesitated to play him big minutes.
That's true.
Like, there was the Boston game. There was the Washington game. They are
Portland game.
Yeah. They have shown that once. And I think they haven't confirmed this because they don't let me talk to sports science staff. But in my head, this is the way it makes sense. Is the toll of getting your body ready to play and going through shoot around and going through pregame and then playing and then the cool down process, that is such a bigger extra cost than a couple minutes when you're already warmed up.
Right.
Where obviously anytime you're on the court and anytime you're fatigued, your chances of injury exist. But I think they've looked at it as, you know, the total number of times you have to get your body up and ready to go is a better measure of load than how many minutes you play once you're already up and going. That is my interpretation of you can play 40 minutes, but you're sitting the next game.
See, I agree with that. My only concern is, and it's not necessarily a concern so much as it is, I haven't seen it yet, but if, I mean, we can all agree that Kawhi is sort of playing about 60% on defense, right?
Yeah, he is not playing 100%. That's
yeah, sure. Exactly, right? And it's completely natural for a lot of superstars to do that. Honestly, every superstar outside of Giannis is doing that this year. Maybe Embiid, it depends if you want to call Embiid a superstar, but yeah, I mean, is it realistic to expect Kawhi to basically flip a switch and turn it on in the playoffs such that it's not even necessarily his performance, but it's just that he's going to be taking on so much more responsibility, like playing defensive player of the year type defense, going up against the top opposing player while also playing 38 minutes and, you know, averaging like almost 30 a game.
Yeah, I don't have an answer on the defensive end. I don't think his offensive usage is going to change all that much.
Okay.
Defensively, what's as interesting to me about it as the fact that he hasn't looked awesome defensively is that the Raptors really haven't tasked him with guarding the other team's best player. You look at the Houston games, he didn't spend a ton of time on Harden until late in that first game when they were trying to come back. You look at the Milwaukee series, I think he spent like 9 possessions on Giannis over the course of those games. Now, he missed, I think, one or two of them. He missed one of them for sure, maybe two of them. But he didn't.
Kawhi, yeah, he missed the first game.
Yeah, so did Giannis. But he didn't spend a lot of time on Giannis in any of those meetings.
Right, it was mostly Pascal.
Even like Boston, when they got to those late game scenarios, like they didn't put him on Kyrie. So yeah. I'm curious if that, as much as Kawhi's engagement level, like are they still going to have him hanging out in the corner on, you know, Damari Carroll?
Yeah.
So to save his load, or are they going to.
Man. If DeMar Carroll got guarded by Kawhi Leonard to any degree, that would be
he's the black Kyle Korver.
He's senior swag daddy.
And he plays with the white Kyle Korver, Joe Harris.
Oh, Joe Harris. Yeah.
The
white Blake Murphy, actually.
That's what I'm that's what I'm most curious about from a Raptors usage standpoint is like, is Kawhi guarding the best player on the other team, or is he just playing better, guarding off the ball and kind of playing that old LeBron free safety role?
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm based on what's happened this season. And the thing is, look, it's not like the Raptors had bad defenders around him, right? Like, Pascal's a good option. Danny's a really good option. Even Kyle's a pretty good option. Like,
yeah,
you know.
And Serge is like, as much as Serge isn't having the gangbusters defensive year, if he gets switched onto a non-point guard, you can usually survive that for a couple seconds.
Yeah, for sure. So. Okay, I mean, but going back to the rest of the minutes, yeah. I think everything else you're more or less okay with. Maybe Norm having too many minutes?
Yeah, I think Norm and McCaw together having the same number of minutes in the ninth man role that OG has in the eighth man role, I see more utility for OG, at least in certain matchups. I think like I think Philly is an OG matchup.
Yeah, okay, definitely. And Milwaukee
I think
as well.
Milwaukee's probably an OG matchup. Although
Milwaukee's
given
big across the board.
Given Norman Powell's history against Milwaukee, that's a... That's a Norman Powell matchup, too. Especially and if they somehow run into Indiana, that's definitely a Norman Powell matchup.
That is true.
That's a start Norman playing 40 minutes matchup.
I hope they run into Indiana. I'm not even just for the Raptors. I just hope Indiana somehow makes it past the first round.
Yeah. I don't think that's happening. But
what do you mean?
They're a game and a half back of Philly for the 3 seed now.
All they got to do is beat Boston.
Yeah. That's I actually want it to happen more for that reason than for Indiana's purposes.
I'm telling you, if they had Oladipo, they'd beat Boston.
Yeah. They'd get the 3 seed and probably beat the Raptors in the second
round. Okay, relax. We've owned the
Toronto Pacers, matches up super well with the Oladipo Pacers. Anyway, we probably don't need to talk about a team they're not going to play.
Right.
I guess, is there a team in the first round that you, like, is there a potential first round opponent where you're thinking on what you laid out changes?
Not really. The thing with OG is that he's really, really important in all these matchups. And I agree. Like, giving OG 15 minutes and giving Norm 11 just doesn't feel right.
Yeah. I'm not saying give him 25.
Yeah. It was just the way I sketched it out. It's kind of tricky because now you have, obviously, all 48 minutes covered at center. So Pascal doesn't really play much small ball center. Although, who knows? Maybe in some matchups he does play small ball center. Like, if the Bucks go with Nikola Mirotic off the bench as their backup center, and then it's like, okay, fine. You could put Pascal there, and then you can have OG on the floor as well at power forward. But the thing is, you got all the center minutes.
Yeah, that Kawhi, OG, Siakam lineup.
I'm telling you,
so
like, that's going to be – I think that should be a really, really nice combination. But, like, again, when you have that much talent at center, it's almost truncating your ability to do that.
Well, you can run those guys 2-3-4, too. It's something I've mentioned before is, like, if you really want to get big but also, like – long and athletic, mm-hmm. you run Kawhi, OG, Siakam 2-3-4 with a center.
Yeah, that's true.
Man,
that's a lot of defensive potential on this.
I know, that's a good Philly lineup, right?
That is a really good Philly lineup. I think OG is going to feature prominently. It's just a little bit tricky. Like, how much of OG can, you know, are you going to put at small forward? Because, look, again, you got Pascal there, you got Kawhi there, and you got two great centers. Like, mm-hmm. it's just hard to find enough minutes, but I do think OG is going to feature pretty prominently. I might be overreacting to Norm hitting a couple jumpers here, but I do feel like the one thing Norm is doing really well right now is playing off Marc Gasol, and Gasol's impact on the team. I think people are still somewhat underwhelmed by Gasol, which, again, I can't really completely understand that at this point. Maybe part of that is with JV scoring so much, but I think Gasol is doing sort of largely what you would expect Gasol to do per 36 minutes. Gasol is averaging 14 points, 10 rebounds, and 6 assists, 1.4 blocks, 1.4 steals, 1.3 blocks, shooting 46% from the field, and about 33% from deep. Like, that's Marc Gasol.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even the rebounding is a bit better than I expected, right? I mean,
Gasol's an interesting guy rebounding-wise because he's always been – his numbers have never been that great, but, like, his teams have always rebounded better with him on the floor. He's one of those, like, Lopez types
right.
where it's like, okay, maybe he's just clearing bodies. I don't really know. But maybe he's just bad defensively and he's had – or defensive rebounding and he's had good rebounders around him. I don't know.
I'm just saying
it's not a strength of the Raptors overall, though.
If he cleared out Mitchell Robinson, then maybe Kyle Lowry's got one good ankle again. You know, maybe it's not Nick Nurse or Mitchell Robinson. Maybe it was Marc Gasol. I'm sure someone in the JV Hives already said that. But, if you look at Gasol's impact on the team overall, right, the Raptors are first in three-point percentage since the trade. That's according to your teammate, Eric Kareen, at The Athletic. And also, producer extraordinaire Chris Black on Twitter also tweeted out that the Raptors, since adding Gasol, are fourth in assists, sixth in passes, second in secondary assists. And for anyone who doesn't understand secondary assists, it's basically – a pass was made to somebody and that player shot and there was a potential for an assist there. That's potential assist. Secondary assist is like a hockey assist.
I would like to clear something up in case Chris Black is listening to this podcast.
Okay.
He tweeted that out while Eric and I were recording our podcast, my Raptors Reasonables podcast.
Right.
And I cited those statistics and I had been looking them up during the podcast.
Wow.
Yeah. So I just want Chris to know that I didn't rip off your tweet on the other podcast appearance.
Wow.
I had it open in front of me as well because I knew Eric wanted to talk about it.
I'm going to edit this podcast audio just like Serge Ibaka edited his Kawhi Leonard question on how hungry are you.
Here's the thing with all this. All of that is great. And we've talked about this in the past when the Raptors weren't a high passing, high assist team, is that those things are good, but they're not good. Like passing isn't. More passing isn't better for the sake of more passing. And more assists aren't better, or more assist opportunities aren't better for the sake of more assists. Since the trade deadline, or since the All-Star break, the Raptors are also, maybe I should use the trade deadline as a date instead, but the Raptors have not been as good offensively as they were when they were not passing the ball as much, which is, you know, obviously that there's a lot going on there. There's been a lot of in and out in the lineup, and you have to adjust the guys and stuff like that. But they are, since the trade deadline, ninth in offensive rating.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not – that stuff has been fun to watch, and it seems like – I think the most important part of it is that the threes are falling because guys are getting cleaner passes and more in rhythm and stuff like that. But it has not by itself meant that the Raptors' offense has gone to another level.
Mm.
There are also probably some games where you just want to throw out the data from that stretch too. That Orlando game –
that Orlando game, that Cavaliers game. I mean, there's been a couple of very, very strange losses in this stretch.
This is the thing about most teams, though. If you take out all their bad games, they'll have really good numbers.
Yeah, that is generally the case. And, of course, they played, like, the Pelicans and the Knicks over the stretch, too. So some of it does balance itself out the Lakers. Man, the Lakers are bad. But I do think that, it, you know, adding Gasol is not necessarily about just the – you know, the total productivity. It's also sort of about the flexibility, right? Mm-hmm. And if you think about the style of offense that the Raptors can play, I feel like they are almost harder to guard now. The trade-off being that you don't have as much of a presence at the basket. Like, JV was so good at the rim.
And as a dive threat. Like, neither of these guys are the role threat that JV was.
Yeah.
But you're getting back some other things, obviously.
Yeah, and I feel like maybe this version of the Raptors were the ball movement is better. It just lends to the fact that it's harder to trap, for example, right? Like, one of the issues that used to befall the Raptors all the time in the playoffs was DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry were clearly the number one and two options offensively, and teams would just trap those guys, and those are small guards to begin with. And when they did get up, when they did give up the ball, whoever was playing, you know, whether it was Tyler Hansbrough or Amir Johnson or Louis Scola or, you know, JV or Bismack Biyombo. I mean, especially if it was Bismack Biyombo, like, they weren't doing anything with the ball. They couldn't really shoot it, and they couldn't really make a play. And even after they got Serge, it was still kind of disconnected because Serge can shoot it, but he's not able to dribble at all.
Especially now, and right now that his pick and pop threes haven't been there, right?
Like, exactly.
Those trap busting threes, especially if it's a high screen and roll.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, so you need a guy like Gasol who can sort of, at the very least, if he's not scoring, he can at least grease the wheels and give someone else a great opportunity to score.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, neither of them are the screen setter Valanciunas is, but Gasol's a pretty savvy screen setter. He flips the direction well and bumps his hips out a little bit.
He's massive.
People can't see the little hip bump I just did, but you can hear it in my inflection.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the sweater you're wearing?
Oh, Gaslight Anthem.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah, a friend of mine brought it by. They're one of the guys comes over and watches football in the morning sometimes, you know?
Oh, okay.
With the lads.
Right. Well, who do they support?
I forget who he supports.
Please don't tell me they're Spurs fans.
No, my one roommate is a Spurs fan. Ugh. Everyone around me is Spurs fans.
It's fans are like, they just like are new to soccer and then they don't want to pick like a team that's like, you know, one of the traditional ones. They want to be different. But the thing with soccer is you really do want to lean into the tradition. You know?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't have a football club that I support, you know?
Let me pitch Liverpool FC to you. Off the pod.
I think Liverpool. I think I did, like, I was jokingly taking one of those, like, which team is for you?
Mm.
And I got Liverpool and someone was like, oh, that says bad things about you as a person. And I was like, damn.
We have a bad reputation as fans. Yeah, I'll say that much. We're like the Boston sports fan base, generally. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
So when you put in Murphy as your last name, like, I think they just, it doesn't matter what other answers you give.
Yeah. I'm going to root for Celtic FC.
Yeah, that's the other option. That's a view. All right, never mind. Redacted. In terms of the Gasol starting or not, I feel like we've had this conversation a million times. Does it matter to you still?
It doesn't really, no. I think there are enough ways to stagger the rotation that you're good either way.
Right.
I think
Gasol's good either way.
Yeah, and I think the starters are good either way. The numbers bear out that as long as those four guys are together, mm-hmm. it doesn't really matter. I mean, there are different, like, Gasol has the worst net rating, JV had the best, Ibaka in the middle, but they're all still very good net ratings. So, like, it doesn't really matter the starters. You know, I don't know. I think there are enough ways to, like, I think Van Vliet has good enough chemistry with Gasol in this, if it's a second unit. And I think alternatively, if Gasol starts, then you can, you know, run those Lowry and bench units where Ibaka has Lowry as his kind of safety net guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's enough. It doesn't really matter a ton to me. I do think if you're looking at the potential opponents, there are more potential opponents that feel like Gasol matchups if you're splitting the hairs based on matchup. Like, I think Boston is really the only team where you're like, that's probably a Serge one. Maybe Brooklyn.
Serge has played Al Horford really well. You need some level of mobility with Al Horford.
Yeah. And also, they're going to have Baines off the bench, and, like, you don't really want...
All you want to do is pull Baines away from the basket. He's basically like a big Aussie Chuck Hayes.
Okay.
Yeah, he even shoots like Chuck Hayes, except he actually makes a shot.
He bangs threes now, though, yeah. Remember that one game last year where he hit, like, seven straight mid-range twos against the Raptors?
Against JV, you mean. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about Blake's adventures in Memphis and also take some Twitter questions. Welcome back to the second half of the Raptors Recap Podcast. Still here with Blake. We're going to talk about your trip to Memphis.
Sure.
Yeah. So there's already one story out there right now about Jonas Valanciunas and how he's doing in Memphis. The reason you're in Memphis, obviously, is because they have a very strange version of the Raptors down there. You got JV, who's averaging 18-8 in 25 minutes per game so far. DeLon Wright's down there, 10 points, 4.5 rebounds, 3.6 assists. CJ, unfortunately, he just got hurt and he's out for the year, but he had a really nice, I think, 33-point
game. 33-point
game,
yeah.
Out of nowhere, really.
His first 30-point game in like five seasons.
Good, and I'm happy for him. He's always an explosive scorer. Bruno's down there. Bruno's actually carved out a career. We can talk about that. And even Jerry Stackhouse is down there.
And Nicky Gross, who was an assistant with the 905.
There you go.
Memphis is one of the few teams in the league with like nearly as much female presence throughout their organization as the Raptors.
Nice.
Which was cool to see and get to meet some of them down there.
That's definitely one of the nicer features about the Raptors is how much they focus on.
And Terrence Ross was there while I was there.
Oh, Terrence Ross was there too. There you go. That was the other Raptors outcast before this was the Magic.
Yeah, when they had Terrence and Biz.
Terrence, Biz, and Weltman.
And I guess if you want to count DJ Augustine, because the Raptors waved him one time.
Man, if he played like that, the original Fred VanVleet.
Wow.
No, I'm kidding. Fred's better.
The disrespect.
At something. I don't know what that exact something is, but...
Basketball.
Okay. I mean, this version of Fred is definitely better.
Yeah, 12 assists in 25 minutes or whatever it is he put up last night.
For people who haven't seen already, the JV story's out. He's obviously thriving. And just what have you seen out of JV? And also, what do the people in Memphis think about JV so far?
Yeah, they were... In talking to people around the team, I think they knew what they were getting in terms of... Jonas Valanciunas is a guy who can score and rebound. I think they were a little surprised at his overall skill level.
Right.
Because, you know, he had his role minimized and he didn't do a lot of playmaking. I think his second game in Memphis, he set a career high in assists. And that hasn't been, like, regular or anything. But I think it sounded like they were a little surprised at just how many things JV could do capably, mm-hmm. if not in an elite fashion. I think the big thing for them, especially with Jaren Jackson out, is that, you know, they're in a weird spot because they are a rebuilding team, but they have incentive to win because they want to convey their pick this year, but it's top eight protected. So short of them getting like the number one or two pick, they would rather fall like 9, 10, 11 and convey that pick. So they want to be winning right now, and JV kind of helps with that. And looking ahead to his player option next year, which I would think it's likely he picks up, you know, that's a high character, high spirit guy to kind of build around who's been through a building process before. So they seem pretty excited about it. JV himself still seems a little hurt.
I mean, he loved it here. He loved Toronto.
He joked with me that it was always a joke when he would say it, but he used to say all the time that his son would play for the Canadian national team, and he took that joke off the table now.
Yeah. Oh, that's really unfortunate.
Yeah.
Damn, that's heartbreaking.
But, like, I think he's a little hurt, and, uh-huh. you know, he's still spoke in ways that it's like, oh, like, it has to be the team first, and they have, you know, they made their decision, I just have to play within that and stuff like that, but... You know, I got the sense that he was happy to be able to show a little bit that, hey, this is what I could have been doing, at least offensively. And he's played pretty well defensively there, too.
So Jonas Valanciunas wasn't the only Raptor that you're going to be writing about. I believe there is also another piece coming on Bruno Caboclo. And I'm going to be very interested to see that one because Bruno has always been this mysterious half-meme, half-player that, quite honestly, I really hope he's grown into just, you know, not half meme, but maybe like 1/10 meme and 90% player, because you want to see a guy like that succeed. I mean, for you personally, you've seen him at every step of his career, and I believe you are honestly uniquely positioned in terms of anyone else in the Raptors media landscape to tell the story of Bruno Caboclo, and you were down there in Memphis. What have you seen out of Bruno, and what did the people in the organization think of Bruno?
Yeah, it was fun, man. It's obviously I spent a lot of time with 905. Picking up little chunks of Portuguese where I could to, you know, get actual quotes out of him and stuff, and watching him you know, turn from just like a lengthy, like a lanky kid into like an actual almost basketball player.
Yes.
And now he looks like an actual basketball player. Whether or not he's going to end up, you know, being an NBA caliber basketball player, we still don't really know. The early returns of Memphis are pretty good, but he's tailed off a little bit. I think the most interesting thing was, one, that Memphis brought him in to play. We talked about with JV a little bit how they want to win right now. So even though they're developing, you know, they don't want to, they're not force feeding him 40 minutes.
Right.
Just to get development reps. If he plays poorly, he gets the hook. And I think having Jerry Stackhouse there has helped a lot. A guy who coached him for 2 years, a guy who knows him really well. And, you know, every team, every assistant coach is responsible for every player.
Mm-hmm.
But there are, you know, Phil Handy works out this guy. And Jamal McGlure works out with this guy. Or yeah. Patrick Mutombo works out OG before the game or whatever. You have your guys. And Stackhouse and Bruno have that. And that allows them to kind of continue that relationship and, you know, help the environment Bruno has to develop within. I think the thing that they seem most impressed by, because the, you know, the defense has been nice, the offense has been up and down as his three-point shot has been up and down. I think the thing that they are most impressed by is that he's come in with a different attitude and a lot more maturity than the book on Bruno was. Something I write about in the piece is that Bruno has had some bumps in terms of growing up in what's a pretty difficult environment for an 18-year-old kid to get dropped into.
Exactly.
So they've been pretty happy with his maturity level and how he responds to failure and how he responds to success, and how he responds to being a teammate and not being this, you know, development project who's getting babied and stuff like that. So it was pretty right. cool.
Yeah, and I think, look, honestly, it was probably good for him to get away from Toronto just a little bit in this environment here, because, like, I think because he had that really magical night against the Bucks back in 2015, that, I mean, that debut was, I wrote about it once, it was quite honestly one of the most hype moments ever in Raptors history, and it happened in like a late November game, but just all the things that went into, I think the Raptors had like a 50-point lead at one point, and then Bruno came in, and then he did, you know, he extended that 50-point lead, so that was that kind of game. But yeah, I mean, I really especially interested to hear about the or to read about the Stackhouse angle, because I think Stack last year was the guy who said that, you know, so long as he's on an NBA bench, he's going to try his best to get Bruno an actual rotation spot. And he's always been that guy that's really believed in him. And I think it has to be.
And they asked him. Stackhouse had really input. Rewarding.
Oh, definitely.
Before they signed him, they went to Stackhouse and they were like, hey, what do you think?
Right.
And Stackhouse was like, no, do it.
And he's always said that he's an incredible defender,
mm-hmm.
an NBA caliber defender. I think that's the part with Bruno that is definitely there, and it's sort of just, can he do the other stuff?
Yeah,
right?
And for a long time in the G League, it was, well, he blocks a lot of shots and gets steals because he's so long, and even if he's out of position. But now he's, like, he defends well. And it's just the G League, but, like, his...
He was on LeBron.
Yeah. His, No, but, like, even against Orlando, the one game I was at, he, like, came out of nowhere for this huge block on DJ Augustine. And it's, like, the way – I don't want to give too much from the piece away, but Stackhouse has an intelligent way of describing it and how things have started to click for Bruno on that end. And Stackhouse – and this surprised me a little bit, not because I didn't think Bruno was a savvy guy, but just because it's not something you think of with young prospects much. Yeah. Stackhouse said that, like, Bruno is, like, a really good film guy. And he can see things that are supposed to develop and things like that. And maybe, you know, part of the learning curve has been being able to communicate that kind of stuff. And there's a funny, I don't want to give it away. It's in the story. I don't want to talk too deeply about it, because it'll give something away from the story.
Where can people find the story?
They'll be able to find it at The Athletic probably Wednesday. I think it's going up Wednesday.
Okay. Yeah, please read it. It's a Blake Murphy piece.
I talked to everyone.
So it's going to be an epic, but I think this one is really going to be just truly epic. I mean, you got guys from the Fort Wayne Mad Ants on there, man.
Yeah, I talked to everyone.
Yeah, but not CJ Fair.
Not CJ Fair,
unfortunately.
No. Former Bruno Caboclo teammate with Fort Wayne, CJ Fair.
That must have been kind of awkward, a little bit at least.
Must have been a little awkward for sure.
Yeah, he definitely got clowned a little bit. It is what it is. That was probably CJ Fair's most relevant moment too. If you really got to think about it, like.
Yeah, I mean, he's had some moments in the G League, I guess, but
yeah,
really, that's it. You made a guy cry.
Yeah, 2015 feels like such a long time ago, but it's been a really good run. All right, so we're going to wrap up that portion of the podcast and move on to taking some listener questions. I got 67 questions now.
Oh boy.
On Twitter, and that's just impossible to go through them. So I picked out a couple here for us to go through. First one from our guy, Sasha. If you had to do double date with any Raptors player at Rabba Fine Foods, who would it be and why? So this is obviously a reference to OG Anunoby putting that on Danny Green's Instagram, I think?
Yeah, I think so, when he posted a pic of him and his girl from Rap City Social or something like that.
Uh-huh. So OG, obviously very much a Toronto man at this point, but double date with any Raptors player at Rabba Fine Foods.
I will say, while I was in Memphis, I third-wheeled with a former Raptor over barbecue.
Wow.
Bruno walked into a barbecue joint after me.
That sounded so mysterious.
Yeah, no, Bruno walked into a barbecue joint like right after me one day in Memphis, and it was pretty funny.
DeLon filming another The Spot commercial.
No, honestly, I think my answer is OG.
Yeah?
I think the opportunity to observe what that guy would be like on a date would be really... I know that other people would probably answer this in ways that, like, you know, your date's going to go the best or whatever,
yeah.
I feel like that would be the most entertaining.
The last player would take a surge.
Yeah, because he would go...
No.
No,
that's not happening.
That wouldn't be a double date for very long.
No, it wouldn't be. It wouldn't be.
Can you be a fourth wheel? Is that a thing?
I mean, you're like sixth, seventh, maybe. you're like a 10-day contract wheel. Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, first off, in order to go to Rabba Fine Foods, you got to really go with someone that would really appreciate it. Like, I feel like Pascal would really love being on a Rabba.
Yeah.
You know, because you got to be willing to eat, like, you know, those rotisserie hot dogs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it'd probably be Pascal. You would be pretty hype about it.
When I lived at, like, Queen of McCall, I ate at Rabba Fine Foods more than I would care to admit.
You were so close to Chinatown.
I would eat in Chinatown a lot too, but if when you're walking up from the arena after the game and the Rabba Fine Foods is 24 hours and you pass it on your walk home.
That is clutch for Blue Jays games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, like I said, it's more than I'd care to admit.
All right. Well, and now you're eating, Memphis barbecue with Bruno. You know, yes. The globe is real for everybody.
Yeah. And by accident, it wasn't planned. And also, to be clear, it was after everything was done for the story. It was my last day there, and he just happened to wander in after me. It was very funny.
That's adorable. What did Bruno have again?
I think he had a sandwich. Mm. I can't remember. I had all the meat you could throw at me.
Nice.
Which phrasing, I realize. But
I'll clip that. Next one from Zoobs. Oh. We're only taking questions from actual real life friends, apparently.
Yeah, and now we're into the Yahoo, your coworker portion of this.
That's right. Shout out to Zeus for being here until midnight, helping me out with 10 things in the podcast.
He's probably upstairs right now.
Probably, yeah. We should say what.
He could come down and ask in person if he really wanted.
He really could. What's the first thing you would add for OG to make a Siakam leap next year? I really like that question.
It's a good question. And it's actually, I was talking to someone about it. I think I was talking to Joe Cash about it last night at the game as we were watching OG warm up.
Let's see how many Toronto media people we can reference.
Yeah. This is just a name drop of people that you follow on Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah. And none of them are impressive. They're all just people from Twitter.
Oh, come on. Cash's hair is impressive.
Cash's hair is impressive.
Yeah, it's really impressive in real life. I've seen him play like entire soccer matches. Hair still looks good.
Yeah. I think for OG, the biggest thing is, and this is a broad term, but like his face-up game has to improve. Right now, his shooting is steady enough.
Yep.
You can only work on cutting off the ball so much anyway.
He's already there.
Yeah. And then defensively, you know, he's a good defensive prospect. He's got to work on the handle, and more so than the handle, the control of the body and the control of the ball as he's driving. Because he does have that spin move that he can bust out sometimes, mm-hmm. but a lot of times he'll go up for that, and the ball isn't in the hand you want to go up with, or the ball's too low and the defender can get a hand on it. A lot of that is just reps and, like, you know, how you position your body before the contact and stuff like that. And I know it's something he's working on, but you could probably work on it a lot more come the off season. It's just, you know, he has a decent first step and he has an okay handle, and you just got to put those things together and think about where you're trying to get to and what position your body is in best when you get there. So,
yeah, for sure.
You know, not everyone can be like Siakam and just spin and look at a control and it still works.
But I mean, hey, look, listen, to the point of the spirit of the question, right? The fact that Pascal made this leap. Like, Pascal would have a lot of moments last year where he was kind of going out of control and things like that. And it's really when you pare down that and really you give a guy coordination. I feel like Pascal's always had more natural coordination than OG. But if you can somehow teach a guy to be coordinated, I think that's it, right? Because OG, he definitely shows enough flashes where you're like, man, I wonder if it was a different team, if it wasn't like, you know, a team that has finals expectations, and if he wasn't asked to come in to be the fifth starter and then later on a bench guy. Like, if he actually got a chance to develop like he would be in a different situation, like how much he would have already grown. But I think the steady development approach could also really work for him, so long as he can basically learn coordination and balance. Because I agree with you. It just seems like he's kind of out of control sometimes.
Yeah.
But he's definitely athletic enough and long enough and even skilled enough, really, to make it all happen. I don't think he's going to turn into Kawhi Leonard, which is sort of the initial comp that he was given, which was just too high of expectations to put on anybody. We've seen Kawhi Leonard this year, okay? This guy is really, really good. But I think OG has it in to be like a premium Trevor Ariza. You know.
Yeah, that's kind of what and I try to temper expectations for people after his rookie season, because I have been and am super high on him, and I think, you know, if he develops well, he could be an elite role player. And
yeah,
like, because you're saying a guy maybe, because I'm not projecting him to be an all-star, that doesn't mean I don't think he's going to be really good. Really mm-hmm. good role player is important. I think he could be a really good role player. Maybe that stuff comes along, but I don't think it's fair to look at Pascal Siakam and be like, hey, maybe this other guy should.
Yeah, there you go.
Like that.
I was also looking through my likes, by the way, and I saw one of your tweets from yesterday. Very sweet. It's really fulfilling, especially not at your best, to be able to find pride and excitement in what people close to you are out there accomplishing.
Yeah. That was one quarter about you.
No, that's nice. The next one from Todd. The ball movement without Kawhi's absurdly better. What's the best way to balance Kawhi ISO and the beautiful basketball that we see him, the Raptors, play when he's out?
Yeah, that's tough because, you know, it the way I described it early in the year was like it was like two offenses operating at once. And mm-hmm. kind of, and you know, ideally you would want those to slowly blend over top of each other and become one. And it has done that a little bit. Like you mentioned earlier, Kawhi has slowly gotten better as a playmaker.
Yep.
You know, I think they can do some stuff with, you know, having Kawhi trigger some of their motion actions rather than being the end result in them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, honestly, is that, and you look at, you mentioned all the passing numbers that Chris Black tweeted out earlier. A bunch of those games have been with Kawhi in the lineup and Kawhi playing big minutes and having big usage. I don't think, you know, I think they've gotten to a point where, short of the end game scenarios, that has started to look a lot better.
Right.
Obviously still a work in progress, but sometimes you're just going to ISO for a really good scorer.
Yeah, and I think part of it is also just the team has to sort of learn to play around Kawhi. It's not just Kawhi's responsibility. Like, mm-hmm. if he's drawing a double team, it's the responsibility of the other four players to position themselves in places where they're open and get themselves ready to catch and shoot, right? And I think Kawhi has, for the most part, done a really good job of that with Danny. You don't see any issues with Danny and Kawhi playing together.
Kawhi's numbers are all so much, like his on-off numbers are so much better with Danny.
Everyone's is, man. Yeah. Is Danny still like top five in plus minus?
I think so.
He must be. He played yesterday. That was like another plus 40, so. But yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of a two-way street in that sense. I honestly, the way Kawhi's pet plays are, it's just sort of hard to play off of that, right? Like, mm-hmm. if a guy's posting up, I don't know what else you really want to do around that
to
sort of
cutter,
build
maybe.
Chemistry. Yeah, exactly, right? And they've done the cutting thing a little bit. Pascal's been doing that. And Kawhi's hit Pascal a couple times. But for the most part, it's just really learning how to space and how to be ready to catch and shoot. And Kawhi understanding where his options are going to be and those options actually being there.
And honestly, sometimes, you know, sometimes it sucks that the answer is, well, Kawhi's got a good matchup and you just got to let him cook for a little bit.
Yeah.
But I forget the game. There was a game the other day where it felt like he hit like 7 elbow jumpers in like a quarter. And he was just like getting to that spot where he can raise up from like 14 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, you know what? He's got that matchup and, you know, the hot hand might not exist, but you just kind of, when your superstar has it going in a matchup, you maybe just let it ride for a little bit. And, you know, maybe it costs you a possession or two after as you try to adjust back in and guys have been standing still. But sometimes you got to ride your guy.
I'm going to clip that as well. Next one from Muhammad Ahmed. Best case path to the finals versus worst case path to the finals. What's the worst case path to the finals? If you're in the finals, then that's not really worst case. But I think it just means easiest and most difficult path.
I think are we including very unlikely things at this point?
What do you mean?
Like Charlotte could still mathematically get into the seventh seed, but I would put the odds at extremely unlikely.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay, so Miami then is, I think, the easiest of the four teams that could land at seven.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it depends. I mean, do you feel like Miami's easier than Brooklyn?
Yes. I just don't think they – like, Brooklyn shoots so many threes that they could steal a game or two. Miami's just not very good. They're playing really well since Goran Dragic got back, and Dragic has always been a problem for the Raptors. But they're just they don't have a ton of talent.
Also, the Raptors have kind of sunned the Heat this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Spoelstra's a little bit of a concern, but, like, Hassan Whiteside gives you even more back than usual in a playoff series.
Yeah. We all saw that before.
Yeah. I think Miami is the preferable
first-round matchup.
And then I would think Detroit's the least favorable of those.
It depends. For us media people, Detroit's probably definitely the most favorable first-round matchup.
I don't know. Do you really want to read the takes? You really want all the columnists to come off the Leafs beat a playoff round early? And
wow, they should have kept Casey. Yeah. The issue wasn't Casey, it was Masai. No. The takes will be ridiculous, but also I think it'll just be really fun for the fans, you know?
Yeah, I think so,
like six home games, seven home games.
Yeah.
We'll even go seven.
Five home games, hopefully.
Yeah. Hopefully for us.
I'm done with seven game first round series, man.
Yeah. We'll see if the Raptors are as well. I generally agree with you. I think the one thing with the Nets that we're overlooking is just how small that team is and how young that team is. And as much as, you know, those factors, you know, I mean, look, if you hit some threes, it papers over a bunch of errors and mistakes. But I do feel like in terms of just how physical the playoffs are and how much the playoffs are about executing and intensity and things like that, it's kind of a reverse of Raptors Nets from 2014.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that team was just bullying the Raptors, who were had young, fresh legs, were shooting threes better and stuff like that. But they ultimately won because, you know, the Nets just were more physical. They had a player, a big wing player that no one could guard. And the same thing with Brooklyn, right? Like, yeah. Brooklyn would have nobody, absolutely nobody to throw on Kawhi.
Look, it's very telling that as fun as this Brooklyn Nets team is this year, they're the first team to ever hit 23s against the Raptors and lose. Okay. Now, a lot of that, any 3-point stat is like because teams shoot way more threes now, but it's funny to phrase it like that. And that's basically what it is. They have to be hot from three, and D'Angelo Russell has to be hot from floater range for them to have chance. Even then, it might not. But I still, you know, 3-point variance being what it is, Brooklyn maybe steals a game that way.
Yeah, that's true.
But I don't think they're – I still think I'd rather play Miami. They'd rather play Miami, sorry.
Second round.
I think Indiana is the best case. And Boston is the worst case.
In second round?
But mostly
– Yeah, I guess so, right?
Boston, like, I don't really believe in Boston, but I think – it's a worst case because if they manage to get to the 3 seed, that would mean they've been playing really well and they've started to figure it out a little bit.
Right, right. In Philadelphia, like I think they'll be difficult to play, but I think the Raptors match up really well with the Sixers.
Yeah, and then I guess the
playoff Ben Simmons. It's kind of starting to become a thing.
Yeah,
look, I mean been in one playoff series.
The Sixers
series,
are really good, but the Raptors match up pretty well.
Right, right.
I guess in the conference finals, the best case is just anyone knocks Milwaukee off before the conference finals.
That's what I'm hoping for. I'm really hoping the way it is right now, Boston's probably going to get past Indiana. And I feel like out of all the top contenders in the Eastern Conference, Boston is just best equipped to go up against Milwaukee. Yeah. Because you have that combination of Kyrie and Al Horford playing pick and pop in the middle of the floor. Mm-hmm. And that's
which is Milwaukee's biggest defensive weakness.
Exactly. Yeah. Although Milwaukee recently they've been trying a lot of switching defenses and stuff, and it really worries me because that team is also very primed to switch.
Yeah. The Brogdon thing makes it tough, though. That sucks.
That is true. That
sucks.
Milwaukee, obviously.
Also, like, we're just kind of owed a Raptors-Celtics series at some point, aren't
yes.
we?
Yes. Yes, we are. Yes, we are. All this posturing. I mean, Boston's had a lot better press for a team that has done
not
and accomplished
much.
Not as much as the Raptors in the last couple of years. And who knows what the future holds, but I'd also rather take Pascal over any of their prospects.
Yeah.
So there it is. Plus, we have Raptors South in Memphis ruining their pick as well. So it's good. The whole confluence of factors is really working. Okay, next question from John: is the existential dread creeping in like it has every year? I would say this year, no, not at all.
Yeah, and even if it were, it's a completely different kind where it's like, there's not like, oh, they're so good in the regular season. Are they going to fail again? Because none of the pieces are the same. Like, Kyle's the same.
Yeah.
But that's kind of it.
Yeah.
Like, Siakam wasn't great in the playoffs, but OG was like the only guy who didn't back down from the playoffs. And
right.
Like, Kawhi's won a finals MVP and Danny Green's won rings and Gasol's done playoff runs. And
Nick Nurse is a G League champion.
Two-time
G League champion.
Yeah. And just like if they don't, if it doesn't work in the playoffs this year, it will be for different reasons.
Right.
And for that reason, I can't bring myself to like dread it just because it'll, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, look,
it's not going to be the same stuff that sinks them.
Outside of playing Milwaukee, the Raptors will have the best player in the series.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel a lot better.
Which hasn't been the case. Like maybe what, that Miami series is the only time you could say that?
Barely, because JV went down.
Yeah.
Another one from Talib. Who wins a battle royale with our current Raptors?
Not Serge. You can't land a punch on anyone.
Oh, there you go. There you go. I feel like Mark will do some damage.
He might be too nice.
I like how he just slaps at the ball like five times a game. And he picks up a foul at least two, three times, just lazily slapping at the ball. I feel like he could slap who on the team? Malcolm Miller out of the ring. Is that how battle royals work? You got to get people out of the ring?
You got to throw them over the top rope.
Okay. You can slap someone over the top rope.
Yeah, I mean, if you hit him. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, all right.
I think Kawhi wins.
Yeah?
Ooh, actually, on the current roster, mm-hmm. I might pick Eric Moreland.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a surprise pick, but I guess it makes sense. He is very big.
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking like, if we're getting really wrestling with this, there's no way they would hotshot a new guy to win the...
No.
They'd know, there's no way they'd book it that way.
Yeah.
But he's big.
Okay.
He's pretty strong.
Okay.
But I think probably Kawhi.
Yeah, it makes sense. I feel like Kyle would also be, by the way, like at least one of the last three. At least.
Yeah.
Like he would somehow like...
He would get hurt though.
Wow. Wow.
When he got down to the final three.
Depends if Mitchell Robinson was in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm going with Mark, but you're going with Moreland. I feel like size matters.
I'm
going
to go with Kawhi. I'm going to stick with Kawhi. Kawhi's okay. Big enough.
Yeah.
And, like, he finishes and ones through, like, three guys scratching his arms. And
as we know, that's what translates to wrestling.
And just
whether or not you
you're looking for
ones.
Transferable skills.
There you go.
The ability to execute your offense through stuff like that. League-wide, I think Steven Adams wins.
Yes. Given DeMarcus Cousins a real chance there, and also PJ Tucker. PJ Tucker, I feel like with a low center of gravity, how are you going to pick that guy up?
Yeah.
He probably is like 400 pounds, but is also super mobile, you know?
Yeah.
He's very dense. He's the densest player in the NBA.
There's pretty much any non-basketball competition you could mention, and I'm picking PJ Tucker to like be
yeah.
late in the finals. Like chicken wing eating contest.
Yep.
Whatever.
Yep.
Royal Rumble, whatever.
Oil or...
Excuse me?
I'm sorry. I just read this guy's handle instead of saying coffee. From Oil Dave, I guess, then. How does it feel to be such a content-producing machine?
I think that's a question for you. They
that's a question
know,
for you.
They don't know I'm on the pod.
Well, that's true, but that is a question for you.
That's a question for you, buddy.
It's
You've got this empire here now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's kind of cold in
here. Raptors over everything. It is a little chilly in here.
Yeah. Raptors over everything. That's right. Subscribe to the podcast. It feels good, actually, the fact that, you know, like, the fact that, like, so many people reached out when I made the announcement. It did feel very validating.
You deserve it, man.
Thank you.
You've worked really hard and
Thank you
do great stuff. So,
he also asked, what do the Raptors playoffs look like with a potentially 50% healthy Kyle Lowry? Thanks. Why would you say thanks to that?
I mean, we kind of already.
It's not going to look good.
We already talked about how important Lowry being Lowry is.
Have you seen the 2015 playoffs or the 2016 playoffs? That's what 50% Kyle Lowry looks like.
Yeah.
It's not good. It's not good.
Yeah, they need Kyle Lowry to play like he's been playing lately. They need him to be the second best player on the team is what they need him to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And then last one from Ryan. Bro, are you coming back next year?
That's really good. I can't wait to see that episode.
Yeah, seriously. Shout out Alex.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I'm sure everyone who's listening to this podcast gets that reference.
Yeah, definitely.
But that's
So you're around the team all the time. The Serge and Kawhi bromance is real.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not like visceral.
I wouldn't
like,
use the bromance term, but like Serge is the only guy I've ever heard like chirp Kawhi or like make Kawhi laugh. Really.
Okay.
Weirdly, I think Patrick McCaw is the one he talks to the most because their lockers are right next to each other.
Okay.
He's just like always talking to Patrick McCaw. But...
That's the one I would never have guessed.
Yeah, their locker proximity. That's all it is.
Pat McCaw, first one out at the Royal Rumble, for sure.
Yeah.
Or Battle Royale.
Yeah.
Whichever one that is. Is there a difference?
Royal Rumble is one specific event, like the biggest Battle Royale of the year. The Battle Royale is the term for general...
The format.
It's like the difference between basketball game and March Madness.
Right, I see. Okay, well, that's a great analogy. Blake, thank you for coming on the first ever episode of the Raptors Recap Podcast for Yahoo Sports Canada. You can find Blake's work at The Athletic. Definitely check out that JV piece, and also look out for that Bruno story. That one's going to be great. I really can't wait. So
yeah, I'm excited about it. Thanks for having me on, man.
Thanks, buddy.
The first recap episode?
Yes, the first one. I'll get used to the name.
Of Raptors Over Everything.
Raptors Over Everything. Subscribe to the podcast. I'm not entirely sure about the availability on iTunes just yet. It's definitely in the process, and it's definitely in the works. And anywhere else you want to find the podcast, just drop me a line on Twitter, and I'll pass it along. But it's definitely up there on Spotify, so look for it there. And that you will also find the Raptors Reaction Podcast there as well. So thanks again to Blake, and we'll be back next week.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.